podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap. After Boxing Day football, it's Neil Atkinson. I am joined by Stu Wright, by Ian Ryan and by Paddy Fitzsimons for this one as we're going to look back on Liverpool winning at Aston Villa by 3-1. We're going to look ahead to Liverpool hopefully beating Leicester City at Anfield, but more on that to come. And we're going to have a chat about Cody Gakpo as well, who it looks like Liverpool may well confirm the signature of, possibly even whilst we sit in this room. It might happen before our very eyes. But before then, we've got Paddy Fitzsimons in. Paddy, who's going to win the World Championship? Starts.
I would say between Michael van Gerwen and Michael Smith.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So we're not going with Price. We're not going with Peter Snakebite, right?
Well, I think on the side of the draw, Gerwen Price plays Michael Smith in the semi-finals again, like he did last year, and I fancy a repeat, not revenge.
Okay, there we are. Excellent stuff indeed. Do follow Paddy for all your dart-based updates, or do what I do, which is just WhatsApp him random moments and find out what matches I should be watching and why. Excellent stuff indeed. Let's move on then and talk about Liverpool going to Aston Villa. And going to Aston Villa, Ian, and I'm not going to just say starting fast, because Villa started quite fast as well. It was a bit of a basketball game, I thought, for the first 5 minutes or so. But Liverpool do get the first goal in the game, and when the game does settle, which it does on about the 15-minute mark, Villa don't have another shot right the way through the rest of the first half. And I think it's the first time this season away from home you've been able to characterise half an hour of any Liverpool performance really as being a pretty dominant one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it would have been in Liverpool's thoughts that they were walking into something. You know, new manager, it is under the light, it's Boxing Day, it's a night game, all that stuff. So therefore,
it's a proud support as well.
Yeah, and listen, we've all probably been to Villa Park. It's a good away to go to, but it is a ground where it can get very on top if you let them. So it was no surprise to me that Liverpool come out with a bit of something about them. And I think that's what you saw. They had something about them from minute one. And if anything, I almost thought, I think there's moments when Villa do look pretty good, but you'd expect them to look pretty good because of the things I've mentioned. But I think all in all, Neil, it was a really, really good start from Liverpool. And actually, I know they give up one or two chances, probably more than that over the course of the game, but it is a good display by the Reds.
It's a good display all round, but to focus in on that first half, Stu, it was exactly, a lot of it was what we haven't been seeing. You know, I think that there is, as I say, there is those early attempts. Bailey gets in a couple of times. There's a Watkins header, and then there's nothing else until the break. And this is, that's close to Liverpool of old. And what I mean by that is, I think in our heads at times, Liverpool from 2018 to 2020, we sort of act as though we're on the road and everything was always absolutely seamless and they were always absolutely dominant. And that's just nonsense. You know, they had to earn the right to play. They had to ride storms out. It was an old school style Liverpool performance. They rode the storm out. They got the goal. They built on it. They had opportunities to get another one. There was only one team who was going to score there before the break.
Yeah, Klopp uses the term, you know, reset quite a lot. You know, he's used it since he first come into the club, and taking that opportunity to start again. But I don't think I've ever noticed one as palpable as that last night. It was everything, I think, away from home that we haven't seen this season. There was a level of certainty there, with and without the ball. There was players looked like they knew what they were doing. They looked like they knew the patterns of play they were meant to be moving towards when they were on the ball, but also the shape when they were off the ball. Of course, Villa were going to have chances for all the reasons you said there, Ian. You know, Villa Park, I was expecting it to be bouncing last night for all of those reasons. And of course, they were going to have some chances. But Liverpool had a sense of control that I've not seen away from home this season. There was real purpose. There was real... The link-ups, I thought, as well. The little passing triangles down the sides, which has been a hallmark of Liverpool's ability to be able to get out, were back. They were really noticeable. And then the Liverpool then looking to make big switch as well, draw the Villa team in with those little triangles, and then making the switch across the park and freeing up players with pace who terrified the opposition. So it looked like we had a game plan. It looked like the confidence was back. It looked like Liverpool knew what they were about again.
It's the stats sort of grabbed me this morning. Paddy, Liverpool have a little bit more possession than Villa, but they have a better pass completion rate, but they also put in more pressures. They put more pressure regains. They won more tackles than Villa. They also win more tackles as a percentage of those attempted than Villa. They batter them on the expected goals, especially have done by half time. But that's still the case by the end of the 90 minutes, when I think we all felt under the cosh a bit at sort of 2-0. It's that's a pretty consummate away performance, I think. And I think the idea of them outworking Villa, which I think they'd most definitely do for the 30 minutes leading up to half time, they outwork Villa, the first to everything, and they really do find a way to push them back.
Yeah, for me, what stood out most in that first half, and you mentioned there about the pressures and the regains and the tackles, was how aggressive Liverpool were, in particular the centre-halves. You know, Van Dijk has this image of, you know, calm as you like, things like that. But I think, like you said, I think people forget, on the road, we have had to earn the right to play for a number of years, and that starts with them winning the ball. And I think Watkins is one of them players who's just a handful of the ball.
I don't half like him, you know, he's so good.
The ball's like a magnet to him, and I think you see a lot of times for them last night, and I don't watch Villa too often, but when they're under pressure, they can just play a ball forward and it seems to stick with him, and he's got some jump on him. Like, but Van Dijk and Matip, I thought, were really good in cutting that out, and they knew they had to be aggressive with him. They've given him a yard, he'll control that ball and bring others into play. And I think, you know, the confidence that Stu talked about in terms of Trent switches and things like that, I think that was bred from the aggressiveness and winning the ball back, and players seem to have more time. I think one thing that has stood out to me all season, especially away from home, is first and second balls. We're not winning them enough. We did yesterday, especially first half, after that first 15 minutes when they had a couple of chances. And I think from there, each player seems to have a little bit more time on the ball, and things like them Trent switches, which is a key part of our playing. We've just not seen it enough so far this season. That just came natural to them all again because we were winning that first and second ball.
When they win the first and second ball, Paddy, I feel as though it makes them likelier to find the little pockets of space. That's what I think they manage to do over and over again. They then manage to either come alive into those pockets of space, given where they've just won it and they surge into them. Or the players themselves sort of react really, really nicely. The back that the teammate is going to win it. It felt to me first, as I say, as the first half wore on, it was almost like a virtuous circle. They were backing the teammate was going to win it. So they were either able to back up or make a bit of a run off the base of the fact that we're going to win this back in a minute. Yeah. And I'm going to be in this little space here. And all of that felt a lot better as well.
Well, it's trusting each other again. And I think that's where the breaks probably help, because that reset and playing for the ones who've gone away, playing with other players and things, and then coming back, and then for the ones who haven't, having a little holiday and things like that. When you start playing in that team again and you are winning first and second balls, just like you said, you start backing your teammates more, and you think, listen, I can take a chance here, because if it doesn't come off, we'll win it back and we'll start again. And that's what we've done for years. You know, we've always backed each other, and we've always thought we don't have to force things. We'll take the chances when we have to, and we can try different things. You know, the first goal comes from something that I don't think Trent would have tried before the break. You know, it seems like an easy thing to say, but we've seen too many times this season and pick the easier pass. And I understand why. You know, his confidence is low for a number of reasons. The stuff in the media, a lot's been said about him, but he hasn't been playing too well, never mind the defending. His attacking play hasn't been what it was. And I think, you know, for him to try that just is a clear example of the confidence.
He tries it, Stu, but I think it's also made by the fact that Robertson's making the run. Mm. So it isn't as simple as, you know, if he just does that but Robertson decides to be static, then nothing comes of it. Robertson makes the run, then Salah makes the run, and suddenly it's in the back of the net. The ball is unreal. But I think it comes from this idea of, you want to talk about a reset, you know, it comes from this idea of, no, this is what we do. And all the way through the game, I thought over and over again, I don't know if it came across on the telly, but Robertson was repeatedly not used when he could have been in. And he wasn't annoyed about it. It was like it was the cost of doing business, but he's nearly over and over in, because he's backing any of his teammates to find him. And that, I think, is what you got to see, was they were backing the ability of each other, the character of each other, the setup of each other. They really backed each other in that first half period.
Yeah, well, I think the last thing you mentioned there, the setup is what gave Robertson and other players the confidence to be able to do that, to be able to make those runs. And he wasn't the only one. I thought the movements and the availability from the players, the movements to make themselves available all the way through the game was so evident, and it's been really missing, I think, in the first half of the season. But that only comes about when players have confidence about the setup behind them, the defensive shape, the structure behind them, enabling them to be able to do that. And I do think that when you looked at that shape when Robertson was plowing forward all the time, you know, Trent wasn't going as far forward. Trent was a little bit more disciplined within his role, and he was making the switches from deeper, whereas Robertson was like raiding old style, like almost like a flying winger down that, like a flying Scotsman, some might say, down that wing. And I thought, you know, that only comes from really good conversations, really good training sessions, and just, as we said before, just resetting things a little bit. Because there's no doubt about it, you know, it doesn't take 2020 hindsight to look back and say, we got pre-season wrong. We got the setup for this season wrong. You know, they've changed things because of the number of games maybe they had last season, because the World Cup in the middle of this season. For whatever reason, maybe from the lack of action in the transfer markets. They've definitely had a different approach at the beginning of the season, and it wasn't right. It wasn't right. So this is, you know, it's been the perfect opportunity to make up for that, and I think all the signs are really positive.
The running, I thought, was fascinating. The fact that everyone thought they could get in. Certainly all of Robertson, Chamberlain, Nunez, Salah just felt like they could get in all the time. Ian, I think what Nunez does, by the way, the extent to which he skews the game, is he created so much space for Robertson and Chamberlain. He's dragging everyone at times, Nunez. He just absolutely... The game just become... I can't entirely think of the metaphor for what he does sometimes, because it's as though he just melts the game and now it's just completely differently shaped. And that's what he's able to do. And that's why, you know, repeatedly, I think Chamberlain and Robertson have genuine opportunities, whether Liverpool hit them or not, to move into a huge quantity of space because Nunez takes up so much attention.
Yeah, it was a really interesting performance, wasn't it, from Nunez in many ways. I think Liverpool play a big game of risk-reward because there's a lot of risk in terms of looking to get those rewards. They're making the pitch really big, but obviously if it breaks down, then you are susceptible to getting picked off. And we saw a couple of opportunities where Villa do get in, and I think that's just a consequence. If you're going to make the pitch so big and stretch it so much, then there are going to be times when good footballers can expose you, and Villa do get in maybe three or four occasions where they should do better. But I think the Nunez performance, listen, he'll know himself. He should be coming away from that game, similar to the City game, with at least a goal, if not more. But I think what you can't argue with, he's always in the game, and therefore he's always a threat, and he's always occupying defenders. And I think it'll be very easy for fans of other teams to look at that game and poke fun and have a bit of a laugh about it because he scuffed a few chances. You know, he gets through second half on his left and he puts it wide. He's got to hit the target. He just simply has to hit the target, and he'll know that. But in terms of being a nuisance and causing havoc and being a threat, I guarantee you right now, those Villa defenders are walking off thinking, fucking hell, that was a pain in the arse of a fucking game to have to deal with him, because he's never static. He's always on the move. He's looking to turn, pace to burn. He's big and strong. So whilst there's still fine-tuning to be done and still work to be done with him in terms of just ironing out one or two creases, you know, there's still that rawness that will just come to the fore every now and again. You think, oh, it's bounced off him a little bit, or he hasn't quite taken that the way you'd want him to. All the raw ingredients are there. And I think there's loads and loads of stuff to work with. And I don't think Klopp's coming out, I'm trying to bluff anyone, when he said he loved his performance. So I think he's genuinely made up with probably 80, 90% of what he saw from Darwin Nunez. And I think the players who were playing with him are probably thinking similar as well.
Absolutely.
Because he's creating so much space and so much opportunity for his peers and stuff. So loads to be kind of made up about. But as I say, those goals will come for me, because he's putting himself in the positions as well. And that's the big thing here. It's not as if he's just not getting any chances. You think, well, what's up here? What's going on? Is he not quite got the movement? He's getting the opportunities. He's just not quite staying maybe that cool, calm, collective kind of individual, which I think he'll get to at some point, but loads to be kind of enthused about.
I think on the point as well that both Ian and Neil have made about, you know, and making space for others, there's literally a chance in the first half. I think it's towards the back end of the first half. I think he's just offside, but he tries to square it to Robertson. And that is a sentence as mad, that your centre forwards can square a chance to your left back. But he was dragging that many people over when we were looking for that ball in behind from Trent or Salah, that little bent ball around the corner.
He just telegraphs it a little bit too much and Mings gets back across.
Yeah, he does. But he dragged that many people across that Robertson's got a free run in for the tap in. And he doesn't, that one doesn't quite come off, and he's offside anyway, I think. But I think that just sums up, you know, the point about him melting games. And you can't not be drawn to him as a defender, because you know the pace he's got's frightening. And you know the players on the pitch that we've got are good enough to play the passes to him. I think what I liked as well, and on Ian's point about him, you know, on Klopp being made up about his performance, gives him a massive hug when he comes off, doesn't he? And I think, you know, I think, don't know if everyone's seen it, but Nunez, I think he put on Instagram or Twitter a little thing about, you know, like, happy for the results or whatever, but he said, to the rest, calm down. I think, to say to the people slagging him off, like, you just calm down, like, I'm all right with this, and I know I'm happy with my performance. And so I don't think it is getting to him. I think he might slightly be overthinking some of the chances, but I don't think it's a thing of he's low on confidence. I think he's thriving in this team. I think we've got him where we want him now, and I think the goals will go in. You know, you have some games where it doesn't come off for you. and you know he's 22 and he's going to have all the chances in this team to score goals. I think it's just a case of yesterday didn't go for him, and the same with City, but it's not. I don't think it's something to worry about nearly.
I think for me yesterday was the biggest example of why Mo Salah has seemed over the last few months really, really happy to have Darwin in the team, because I can't remember a game away from home particularly as well where Mo Salah had as much space as in the game. You know, teams normally will have two players on Mo Salah. When Darwin Núñez is in the middle, that's physically impossible. You know, to have two players with that level of pace, to have Mo Salah as your second fastest striker, I mean, that's insane anyway. But, you know, you can see the opportunities that are going to fall Salah's way, the freedom that Mo Salah's going to find himself in the pitch, the more and more Darwin grows into a centre-forward role. I don't want to get carried away, because I do think there's serious work that has to be done with him, and that he has to do himself as well on finishing. And I'm not one of these who necessarily just thinks, oh, that'll happen, that'll just take care of itself. I don't think that's the case. There's plenty of players in the world who I've seen over the years who have loads of pace, and because they have loads of pace, they get loads of chances, but they don't turn into world-class goal scorers. It won't just happen. He's got a bit to do there. But if he does it, you know, if he just gets anywhere, if he just increases his conversion ratio to anything that's respectable, the sheer volume of chances that he creates himself will mean that he's scoring absolute bucket loads.
But it's important for me, this, I've just got his numbers up here. You know, his expected goals is 5.7, his number of goals currently is 5. You know, a brace against Leicester, and he's bang on par, almost certainly. You know, and I think it's more that you feel as though it wouldn't take much for him to be actually quite substantially better than the expected goals. And that, for me, one of the things I'd like to see him do, I think he's really unlucky with the mad one that loops in the first half, because he just strikes it so early and so firmly. And ultimately, if it's not right at Olsen, it probably just goes in the back of the net. You know, it's because he's so far out, it's fine margins. Like, if he puts it a little bit to the left, it could well drag it wide in the end. But for me, I'd just like a little bit more of him. I mean, the one where he's through one-on-one, there's part of it that thinks he possibly doesn't even need to have a shot. He should just run straight at the fella, continue just to run at him with the ball, and then maybe at some point just leather it. I'd just quite like to see him leather one or two a little bit more.
Do you know what, though? What you said there about, you know, his expected goals versus his actual, and maybe we just get a bit of a sense of it. I do think, though, because of the nature, the type of player he is, because he's so quick and so strong, he's going to get loads of one-on-ones. And they're the ones that I think, if you're not putting them away, or at least frequently, or, you know, reasonably frequently, if you're pulling them wide a lot, then they're the ones that people stick, that they stick in people's memories. He gets loads of scruffy goals, he's great at that, he gets loads of crazy, chaotic goals, but he's going to get so many chances where he's running one-on-one with the keeper, and they're the ones that I think he just needs to get himself comfortable in a rhythm where he's just, you know, slotting it down the side of the keeper, or he has a little trick where he just shimmies and goes. He needs to have a signature move, if you like.
I just want to be Alan Shearer.
He knows more than anyone what he's going to do in those situations.
But I just want to be Alan Shearer. Like, I think that what Alan Shearer did when he found himself in that situation was kick the ball as hard as humanly possible, and I've got a bit of an argument for just kick the ball as hard as humanly possible.
I think it's hard, though, when you're going one-on-one with the keeper at that level of pace. It is hard actually to get that. What you need in that situation is just have a bit of a shape of the ball, just pass it past the goalkeeper, you know, pick your post, whatever, or you've got to have your move. And I think the more he doesn't, he's going to have those chances all the time, and there is going to be this feeling around him of not being as prolific as he should be, unless he starts to put some of those away. And that might be unfair, because as you've said there, you've quoted his expected goals versus his actual goals, but I do think that with a player like him, with that asset that's going to put him through time and time and time again one-on-one with keepers, because no one can keep up with him, I think it would, you know, that's the work that needs to be done.
But confidence is a thing, isn't it? So I think what you've said there, Stu, broadly speaking, it's really fair, because he'll know himself he's got to improve that. And, you know, there's not a Premier League striker out there who's going through one-on-one that shouldn't be hitting the target. And he should hit the target. And I think, you know, Paddy referenced before, the one he pulls across for Robertson, he's pulling that across because he's not quite confident, because he's missed three or four very similar ones.
The same one as the City one, yeah.
He's missed three or four. And if you're not getting Harry Kane or Alan Shearer, as just been mentioned, is rolling across the box for anyone. They're putting the foot through and they're knocking it in the back of the net. But I think he'll put out a tweet and say, listen, everyone calm down. But there will be a confidence thing at play. He wouldn't be human if at 22, 23 years of age and he's missed three or four, that his confidence isn't slightly below. So I just think he almost needs one where he hasn't got to think about it that much. And maybe it is one of those where he just follows one in from 20 yards, because you know he's capable of doing that. And then he goes on a bit of a run. So I think when you are a kind of footballer and you are young and you move into a new country, I think sometimes there has to be a little bit of a settling in period. I think it would have been ridiculous if he'd just come and he was banging all of these in. It would have been something, you know, it would have been Haaland levels if he was knocking every single chance in. But I do take the points, and I think the manager and the backroom team will be very much aware that there are things he's got to get better at. But I don't think they were signing him thinking, we're getting the finished article here. I don't think anyone was ever saying that. I think there was always a rawness to his game. And I think some of that you've got to embrace. Now, listen, at some point it might cost Liverpool, and we all sit around this table and go, fucking hell, he's got to do better there. And I think that could happen because of the things we've all mentioned. But I do think at some point he'll just bang one. And I think then all the other things become slightly easy because the confidence level goes up and he's not overthinking it. So when he's running through one goal, you've got loads of time. Even though it's happened so fast, you've still got a lot of time to think. And he's a centre forward, and he's probably got in his own head a little bit where he's trying to be too precise, and he probably doesn't have to be that precise because when you're going through at that pace and you're hitting it with a bit of power, it's probably going to go in most of the time. So I just think at some point, I think it'll turn for him. And as Neil said there, the expected goals versus the actual goals. I mean, it's pretty much there anyway. So we're all sitting here saying it's got a turn for them. But as you said, because of the nature of them and because they're going through one-on-one, that gets highlighted a lot, doesn't it? And people latch onto it. Sky are making compilations of his misses, which is just frankly fucking ridiculous, by the way, that you've got the biggest sports channel in the country highlighting that. When have they done that before on any footballer? It's wild that he's getting that kind of attention. But as I say, I think for someone of his quality, at some point it will turn.
I don't doubt that it'll turn, but it won't. My point is, it won't happen by itself, and I don't think anyone can just say, you know, it'll look after itself, because the instinctive stuff is not what I'm worried about at all. I've heard this word raw being used about him an awful lot, and that's absolutely right, but that's not a compliment. No one's saying that as a compliment. He's raw. He's dead exciting. He's chaos, and I think he potentially could be a brilliant player for Liverpool. But for that to happen, there has to be an improvement in the level in the finishing. And if I said to you now, compare the players that find themselves in the position that he does over the years, you'd be talking about players like Torres, you'd be talking about players like Henry, you'd be talking about players like Owen to an extent. And if I said to you, right, close your eyes now and imagine them one on one with the keeper, what do they do with the ball? You would be able to tell me. You would be able to tell me what those players do when they're coming in from the left-hand side and they're going one-on-one with the keeper. And what I'm saying is, that is something that I think will help him no end. I'm dead excited about him. But for him to go from a player who's raw and has loads of potential to a world-class striker that we hope he's going to become, it won't just happen by itself. There's a little bit of work there to be done.
But I don't think he's that raw now, outside of the, you know, talking about stuff like, for instance, squaring it up, picking a pass, knowing where someone is. You know, the thing he does when he squares for Salah in the League Cup, that's not the action of a raw forward. To do that at that pace, it's tons of quality. he plays someone in, and I think that this is...
Yeah, he's an £80 million footballer. He's not some fella we found exactly raw off the street.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And but when people are saying he's raw...
I'm almost beyond the raw bit now. I don't think he is raw.
I don't think he's raw. I think he's wasteful. But I think the same could have been said about Salah, Mane, and stuff. Not to this extent. They've gone on to become Liverpool great, but I agree with Neil. I don't think he is raw. I think the thing with me sometimes on his decision making, I don't know if that's because he's raw. I think sometimes he just makes the wrong decision making because he's a bit wasteful. I think the one when the Neil reference, where it comes over his head first half and he hits it on the volley, if he does the touch that he does for the third goal and brings it down and slots it, that would have been better. He had space in front of him. Don't get me wrong, it would have been a hard thing to bring out the sky like that, but I think he's got the quality to do it. I don't think he's a bad footballer at all. I think we're
confidence thing that though, Pat, isn't it? Because then you've got to try, and if you don't get that touch right, you try and put it down, it bounces off you. You can imagine what comes after that, you know what I mean? So the almost easier thing to do is just hit it and you hope it goes in.
But also I think stuff like, for instance, the third comes because he makes the right decision at that point. And that's where I think he is interesting. I don't think it is just sort of one thing or anything like that. I take your point about the one-on-one arc, but then in that instance, for instance, Salah misses a really similar one just before. The difference is you've seen Salah score then for Liverpool.
Yeah.
I've got no doubt Nunez has scored from that position for Benfica. If not, we wouldn't. Well, I think
we just
haven't
seen it.
But also, I think he scores one against us from that position, running through one-on-one slots last season against us, running through one-on-one. It's that we haven't seen one yet, and especially at a moment where it feels like, you know, Bacevic does brilliantly for the goal. Don't get me wrong; like, it's incredible. It's a great finish. It's a great bit of play. But if Nunez just scores that goal, we all feel even better about it because you've seen him do one that really mattered when the big pressure was on, that does all of that, that shows everything's in order, if you know what I mean. So I do take that point. I think that I don't want to call him raw anymore, and I don't think it's fair or valid now. I think he is now. I think we knew we were getting someone who we had to work on, but the manager's now already had 6 months, for instance. We're now moving into 6 months, and I think you can already see the benefits. I think he verges on unplayable when he's flying. There was the one that I couldn't get out of my head was when, and it was Torres-esque, when he's in a wide area and he stands the defender up, and the defender thinks he's going to go back one or look to get on his right foot and cross it in, and he just runs to the byline. And there's not, it's undefendable in that moment. And he puts the cross across and no one attacks it. And part of the reason why is no one thinks he's going to do it. And he just surges into that space. He's got so much time. He picks out a lovely ball that if anyone comes across at the back post, for instance, they're just nodding it into an empty net. But no one gambles because everyone thinks, well, he's not going to do that. That's not something footballers can do in that position. It shouldn't even be possible. And it just makes it look so easy. And I think another problem that he's got is I think loads of what he does well, he actually makes look really easy. So afterwards, like for instance, the one that he squares for Salah in the League Cup, going at that speed to put it on Salah's, pretty much on a plate for Salah like that, and that's really hard. But he makes that stuff look easy, and that's why, why I'm excited and why I think when it does click, he could make lots of other things that people think are hard look easy.
I think you're already seeing kind of little bits of improvement to his game. So you've mentioned the League Cup game there, which I think what he does at pace there is phenomenal, to be honest. Brilliant the way he does that, because, and he makes it look so easy, as you said, so people kind of can gloss over it a little bit. Well, he's just squared the ball, well, he's moving at such pace, the way he's broke, the way he's spun his man,
to even get your head up,
yeah, and the opposition he's coming up against as well, you can quite easily just say, yeah, he's just done the basics there. It's far from that, but I think when he compare, I think it was when he came on against City, and I take your point about whether you call him raw or not, you can use different words to describe. I think sometimes he doesn't look quite polished. But again, I think that's part of his almost appeal, if you like, because you're not quite sure what he's going to do. But the game against Spurs, his decision-making in that game was levels above what you'd seen go previous. And I think that's almost the stuff you talk about. When you say they're working with him, I think they're working with him on stuff like that. What decision are you making when you get to the point? And it was very easy in that football match to make a different decision, where I think for the goal, everyone thinks he's going to bend it, but he gives it instead. And then there's another similar one second half against Tottenham where, again, I think he lays Salah in again and Salah should do better. And everyone's thinking, he's going to hit this, and he doesn't. So I think there are definite things that I can already see where there's improvements in his game. So I think there is stuff that's clearly going on behind the scenes. But I just think when you're talking about a footballer at the age of 23, it will take a little bit of time, unless you're a freak like Haaland and everything you hit seems to go in.
And he's very dissimilar to Haaland.
Yeah, because Haaland's not involved in a football match at all. He's just not involved. Whereas this guy's completely the opposite. He's always involved in the football match.
I think the thing is as well...
And I'm not comparing it, by the way. Haaland's a far superior finisher, we know that.
There's a tendency in football for us as fans to take very entrenched binary positions. In this case, you're either a Darwin believer or you're not. And actually, that's not what anyone's saying here. It's far more nuanced than that. Everyone on this table is dead excited. Dead excited.
Why do you hate
Everyone around this table, some more than us, are dead excited about Darwin Núñez. But the thing is, at the end of the day, you mentioned something here before, the finished product. There's no one around this table now who can tell me that Darwin Núñez is the finished product, because he's not.
He's nowhere
near the finished product. And that's actually one of the most exciting things about him. He's 23. No one can catch him. That goal that we scored, by the third goal, by the way, I don't think there's another striker in the 80-odd, whatever minute it was, who was going to dig that ball out of the byline to get that ball across.
I can't believe
how many people were thinking that's out.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, he's got all the raw ingredients, that they're all there. But there's work to do. Yeah. And if they do that work, and if he can pull it off, he's going to be an unbelievable player.
Do I guarantee there'll be some weeks
player.
He'll burn your head out? He will. Yeah. Because he will.
My worry,
kind of
there's going to be games
will.
Where we need a goal and he gets seven chances and we don't score and we come away without the points. That's my worry with him. And that's why I think that work has to happen to help him, to protect him. And if that happens, it's not just going to protect him, it's going to send him onto a completely different level.
Talking about different levels, thought straight away, the big man came back at the back. Paddy, I thought... Thought Van Dijk was excellent. It's a strange thing to say. I think the goal helps. Normally you'd say that about an attacker rather than something else. I think the goal just sort of just settles him a little bit. I think Van Dijk wants to feel like he's massively contributing to any team he plays for. It's worth remembering the last time he did. He played a game of football. It was a penalty that he misses. I thought he settled himself down massively after the goal. I was pleased for him, and I think Liverpool as a whole second half, when they come under pressure from a good Villa performance for 25 minutes. I don't think Liverpool defend as a unit that well, but I think there's a lot of really good individual defensive performances, none more so than Van Dijk's.
Yeah, no, I think he definitely stood out. I think, you know, I mentioned earlier about how aggressive he was. That's not something you always see, partly because he doesn't need to be, and forwards will stay away from him and go the other side. But Watkins was right there whatever ball they were playing down either side. He was right on Van Dijk or Matip, and I thought he dealt with them really well. I think, I don't know what his aerial percentage winning was, but he seemed to win everything in the air. And he was just, I think there was one early before he scores. I think it's the Bailey chance where he doesn't quite miss the clearance a little bit, and I worried slightly that they were a bit shaky at the back. But you know, no, you're spot on. As soon as he scored the goal, it seemed to, you know, how often have we seen him start attacks for us? You know, talk about contributing to a team. I think he does, and he's a real leader as well. I think he does need to have his stamp on a Liverpool performance. I don't think that's in question. Yesterday, I thought he was outstanding and Matip as well. I think, you know, they really did have their hands full with Watkins. I think, you know, he always impresses me, but. No, I think they're both great.
Honestly, every time we play Villa, I want to come away and just basically go, why can't I just talk about Ollie Watkins all the time? He's unreal. He's so hard to play against. But Van Dijk does a really, really good job. Right to praise Matip as well, but it was, I really wanted to see a Van Dijk performance, if you know what I mean, Ian, and I felt like we got one.
Yeah, I think, you know, Virgil would himself, I'm sure, admit that he's not been nowhere his best at times this season. I think that was a bit of a throwback to the levels that you'd expect him to deliver, and I thought he was great. I take your point, though. People individually were doing some really, really good stuff, but, you know, back to what I was saying before, I think because we were stretching it so much, there were times when teams, you know, Villa in particular in this case, obviously getting in a little bit too easy. I think it's been apparent across the season where other teams have been able to get in a little bit too easy and cut through is a little bit too easy, and you wouldn't want to see that too much, but I think it is that risk-reward thing. But I thought Matip as well, Neil, was just, again, at a really high level, and it's just a reminder that, you know, he's such an important player to the squad. I think a lot of people will maybe go towards a Konate and Van Dijk partnership when Konate's back and stuff. And you can understand why, because I think he is a footballer who can reach any level, to be honest. I think he can be whatever he wants as a centre-half. But I think with Joe Gomez, I've always been like a Joe Gomez fan, certainly in 18 and 19 and 19, 20. I've said it on other shows. I think he was hitting some really good levels. But the more I see of him at centre-half, now maybe the City game aside, the more I worry about Joe. And I think maybe you might see him get one or two more games at right back, which I've never been a huge fan of, but I think you might end up seeing get more minutes there, because I just think at centre half he just looks quite a lot below the rest of them now for me. And listen, he might get back to those levels, but it's hard to see him getting a run of games unless there's a lot of injuries where all of a sudden, you know, Matip and Konate aren't available, because, you know, Virgil's, you know, first on the team sheet and stuff. So really important to have those lads back. And I think, you know, with the Leicester game, which we're going to talk about later on coming up, and then you've got the quick turnaround for Brentford, and Konate might be back for that, but it was massively important you had Matip back.
The other one who I think plays well over the course of the whole game, who's maybe struggled a bit of times this season, is Fabinho, Stu. Thought he looked more himself. I think, again, when he gets a little bit ragged second half, when there's more space, certainly emerges behind Thiago, in particular because he does skew more to the right-hand side in terms of his normal pattern of play. When he's having to come across and cover that space, I thought he looked a little overworked as much as anything else. But I think for the first sort of, certainly for the first 45 minutes, I thought he was very close to his imperious best.
Yeah, it was really good to see. It was noticeably different than the Fabinho we've seen in the first half of the season. He knows himself. I think it was quite telling that he came forward for the post match interview on the telly last night. You know, and it was one of those extended chats. You know, where they come out with the coat on, because I'm gonna speak for 10 minutes. And you know, it was really good to see, because. I was really quite sad. I wasn't frustrated as much with Fabinho in the first half of the season. I was just quite sad to see like how far he'd fallen. And it hadn't just been at the start of this season. The back end of last season, he wasn't great either. And we'd seen those moments as well where the manager's having to have words with him during the game and all this. And it was just all a little bit uncomfortable. You didn't want to see that. One of your great players, one of the all-time great Liverpool midfielders. And, you know, and he's certainly not of an age where you'd think he's fallen off a cliff. So it was lovely to see him back to, you know, close to his best last night, and to be you know, putting in some really important tackles. Positionally, I thought he was great. I thought he was very aggressive, and I thought he had real confidence and certainty in his play. Wasn't the only one, as we said earlier, but it, you know, he's a key component to this team. People have been talking about us buying three midfielders. It's dead interesting when you're seeing the lot of the transfer links and people putting out, oh, how they'd line up their team if we sign X, Y, and Z. And a lot of the time, it's not with Fabinho in it. You know, and that's Maybe that's a little, being a little bit of a kick that he's needed. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe he's needed a little bit of a time away from the club with Brazil to reflect. Who knows? Maybe he just needed a break. He's not played very much, has he, for Brazil? Did he even get any minutes? Did he come? Did he?
He played the last group game and he was already through.
So maybe it's done him the power of good. But he looks different. He looks, you know, more like the player that we've come to know and love over the last few years, and that is a great sign, because regardless of talking about bringing players in, if we get Fabinho that's close to his best again, I can't see many players in world football challenging for that position.
I thought the level of control we had first half in particular really, really suited him, and I don't want to use it as an excuse for his performances this season, because I think he was off it towards the back end of last season as well, but part of me does wonder if the way we've been for a while now hasn't helped them at all. You know, there was that period that Neil mentioned, second half, when he got a bit ragged. I felt really sorry for him in that, because we just lost complete control, and it was the defence and the forwards. Whenever we'd cleared it, nothing was sticking up top and the defence weren't clearing the lines. It reminded me loads of that little period in the Arsenal game, second half, where we just seemed to go to bits and we gave them all the encouragement we needed. Their goal, you know, you need saying, was coming for a good while, and Liverpool should have spotted that, and we didn't. We didn't regain control of the game at all. And I think in them periods, because he's a midfielder a lot of the time, what we ask him to do, he's a little one-man island on his own. He can look ragged and he can look slow. And yesterday, I really noticed, and I thought, this isn't on him. He's backwards and forwards, and we've got no control whatsoever. He can't predict when Trent's fluffing a clearance. He can't predict when not sticking up top with Nunes. So I think the more we get back to first half and controlling games, I think you'll see him look a lot better.
I think you saw... I thought the Keita sub made a difference. I thought Keita really helped in there as well, a little bit more energy, got himself about. I thought he helped Fabinho out quite markedly, and I think Liverpool sort of, after the Watkins goal, after the substitutions, I thought Liverpool actually had managed to regain 7, 8, 9 minutes of control again, Ian, and I think it helped Fabinho get himself back into the game. It made it easier for Liverpool. I was pleased with Keita, to be honest with you. I thought I'd never see play for Liverpool again. I thought he did well.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I think he did do well. I think... it's hard to get too excited because you don't know how long it'll last. You know, you want to see him fit and stay involved, because I think there's no doubt when you can get him playing and on the pitch, he's an asset, you know, more often than not. Listen, he will have some poor games like most footballers will, and there will be times when I think you've seen him exposed in certain games. But if you can get him on the pitch, I think, you know, the manager certainly rates him. He's played him in enough big football matches to kind of back that up. But yeah, I'll never get overly excited with it, Neil, because I think him, you know, Chamberlain, similar, you never know how long they're going to be around for, because it is fits and starts with both of them. And I think,
but could the limited expectations help? Because I think Chamberlain does fine as well yesterday. I think he offers.
I'm not asking him to do
8, 9, 10 out of 10. I'm asking him to be useful in a Liverpool team that wins, and Chamberlain was, and then Keita was as well.
Yeah, and I think, listen, no, Chamberlain does okay. I think against City, he should have started that game, I think, if not for illness, and then comes on and adds something. He plays the ball to Nunes. And again, I thought first half, he did pretty well against Villa. I think he tires kind of, you know, second half, and I think they have to make the change and stuff. But you're going to get that, because he's not played loads of football. But I think I wouldn't want to see loads of Chamberlain in the starting 11, if I'm being honest.
No.
I wouldn't want to see too much of that. And I think, you know, we'll come on and talk about the new lad who's hopefully joining and stuff. And I think some of that has all been accelerated by the fact that Liverpool might find themselves having to play Chamberlain in the front three more often than not. And they don't want to see that. I don't think anyone wants to see it, really. No disrespect to him. And I think, don't think you can rely on the likes of Firmino to stay fit and stuff. So that front three needed addressing, and I think they've done that. But I think, yeah, listen, if you can get Naby in and around it and stuff and involved, then fabulous, because Liverpool still do need some reinforcements in the middle of the park. And I think with the next two fixtures coming, you know, pretty thick and fast on top of each other, they might have to look at that area of the pitch where they do a little bit of rejigging. And there might be someone like Keita comes in against Leicester. For you wouldn't be surprised, would you, if he suddenly starts on Friday, because all of a sudden he wants to give Thiago, or he wants to give the captain a rest. So, yeah, he did pretty well.
Okay, we'll mention Gakpo then, as it's come up. It looks as though that signing is happening. Stu plays off the left or through the middle as an attacking midfielder slash sort of false nine-ish footballer off the left as well. Another one who plays off the left. Nunez, comfortable off the left. Jota, comfortable off the left. Diaz, comfortable off the left. Liverpool have got Gakpo as well. Does this mean Liverpool are overstocked? I am asking you a loaded question.
Maybe we're just going to come up with this new mad formation. Maybe this is like part of the game plan. We're just going to have five left-sided forwards on the pitch at one time. No one on the right apart from Mo Salah. That'd be interesting.
I think it's five, but I think they feel like Salah can occupy the whole of the right-hand side of the pitch. And what was said before about, you know, if you're going to put two on Salah, who's looking after the other bit? So if you've got footballers who can interchange in those other spaces. I don't think there'd be much away from the performance Chamberlain puts in yesterday that they wouldn't want from Gakpo, other than the idea that maybe there's a bit more of a goal threat, a bit more of a physical threat, a bit more of a number nine threat in there as well. I think they'd be happy enough with the basic of what you sort of see there. And then the idea that creates space for Nunez creates space for everyone else, and that's what they want. I think the idea is Salah plays right, and then there's two who are doing bits and pieces in and out of each other.
I haven't seen an awful lot of him. I saw him in the World Cup a bit, but obviously, like everyone else, I've done all the reading around him in the last 12 hours and looked at all the videos. It was interesting, some of the comments around him is that he can flit in and out of games. He's, you know, he can be really, really great on the ball, really aggressive and dynamic going forward, but he sometimes when they're off the ball, you know, he can disappear from games, which you wouldn't think would be something that Liverpool would be looking for. You know, all the talk about pressing monsters, it seems to be, you know, something that we seem to look for in players. But the fact that he did play in a central position for some of the World Cup did make me think, well, is this part of a longer term option around Firmino? Is there something, because he also played in 10, I think, as well during the World Cup, didn't he? So, you know, does he have these characteristics that Klopp thinks maybe he can morph into something, you know, specific that he's got in mind within the role? But, you know, as you said there, you know, big tall lad, he's quick, good dribbler, and he's what you can say over the last 18 months in Holland, he's been absolutely prolific. He's been not just at scoring goals, but his assists as well. And you know, he's really catapulted himself forward. Didn't he get Player of the Year in Holland last year as well? So you know, that all sounds good on paper.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one, because as you said there, there's lots of takes already on this football, and I think, you know, only time will tell. And I think sometimes when you sign in a player from that league, it's hard to know how it'll translate into the Premier League. Similar to Stu, I only saw bits at the World Cup. I saw most of his games, but he seems to be quite flexible in terms of how he can line up, because I think you referenced there, I think he plays behind a front two against, I think it's Senegal, he plays behind a front two. So it'll be interesting to see what the plan is. Obviously, predominantly left-hand side, but it might not necessarily be that there's a plan for him. Liverpool might have a plan for one or two of the other players who are already at the club. So, you know, Jota often gets references. He likes to play left-hand side. I prefer Jota when he's in and around the box and through the middle, if I'm being honest. And I also think Luis Diaz, who is going to take a little bit of time to get back to his best, given he's probably out till March. And I think, you know, that injury, more than anything, has accelerated this as well, given the fact that also PSV are willing to do business. You know, both things have come into play. But I think Luis Diaz is also very capable of playing in different positions for Liverpool. I know, Neil, you've talked about sometimes is maybe lack of output was maybe a little bit of a criticism when he came to the club. But I actually think, if anything, he didn't quite get the credit he deserved from some quarters. I know we got loads of praise, but I think how he settled, he was phenomenal when he arrived. And I think before the injury, he's arguably Liverpool's best outfield player. But I've long thought that he is capable of playing in different positions across the front three. But also, I think he's got the ability to maybe play behind a front three, Luis Diaz as well. I think he's that good. I think if two people were maybe sitting behind them, two more natural sitting midfielders, and Liverpool were playing then from four, I wouldn't be surprised if Luis Diaz was behind the three, because I think he looks after the ball incredibly well. I think his choice of pass is excellent, and I think his game intelligence is second to none. I think one of the things that stood out for me when he joined the club was that his selection of what to do next was elite level. He very rarely gives it away, and that's very rare for a forward-thinking player. You know, we try things and try things too often or not enough, but he always seemed to be there or thereabouts in terms of decision making. So maybe the plan is around what he'd do with the Jota or what he'd do with the Diaz. And actually, Gakpo is the lad who's going to play off the left. But I think it's interesting that he's 6'4". I think all of a sudden Liverpool have got themselves some dominance at the top end of the pitch. I mean, I don't know how he's going to settle in, but you can see a scenario where, you know, him and Darwin Nunes are causing an awful lot of problems and pinning people back and using the physicality. And I know that's one thing that's been labelled at Gakpo, that maybe he doesn't quite use that enough. But listen, I don't think Liverpool again are signing the finished article. I think they've seen something in this player where they think we can work with them. You mentioned the numbers there, Stu, where they're starting to get big, and maybe that's something they've thought about, you know, getting that footballer in, which they've done incredibly well in previous years, haven't they? They've just got them in at that moment where they're about to go a little bit bigger. And maybe it's one where the manager flexes muscle a little bit, because he's talked about taking more risk and maybe they see this one as maybe a little bit of a risk, but it's not massive money in the grand scheme of the current climate. But maybe he's one he's pushed for because he thinks, actually, if we get older, this kid, there's lots to work with.
Yeah, I'm excited by it. I think I really like a January signing because it feels a bit like cheating. Like, I think things are already going well in the season. I mean, they haven't so far this season for us, but I always think back to, like, you know, Coutinho and Sturridge and then last season with Diaz, and I do think it can sort of reinvigorate a season. I think, especially after the win last night, hearing that news was sort of just, I think it gave everyone a bit of a boost. Van Dijk as well, yeah, sort of just changed the whole season, really. But yeah, no, so it's exciting. I think what Ian said about it being a bit more of a risk, I think we can afford a bit of a risk there. I wasn't expecting it at all. There, people talk about, you know, do we need a forward or a midfielder? I was still in the camp of midfielder. I think Salah and Nunes are good enough to see us through, barring any injuries, which is, of course, you know, a potential risk. Like, but no, I think it is exciting. I think he doesn't have to hit the ground running. It'd be nice if he did, but I think on what you've seen yesterday from Salah and Nunes and the rest of the team, especially the fullbacks looking more like themselves, he doesn't have to. It'd be nice if he did, like, and I think a luxury rich isn't a problem for me. I think if you're overloaded on that left side with great footballers between the age of 22 and 28, happy days of the forward line box for a few years, isn't it?
It is indeed. Looks as though it's going to all happen, all come together. 6'4" is very much worth everyone bearing in mind. Spurs, I don't know if anyone saw anything of Brentford versus Spurs, yeah, by the way, with that on the horizon. If Gakpo's making his debut in that one, my God, is he going to be in for something? He's going to learn a thing or two very, very quickly about the physicality of it all. We'll move on and we'll talk about Leicester, who we had before. We have Brentford. Dreadful, abject, Stu. 2-0 down against Newcastle ever so quickly. It's funny, I was of the view, you know, it's going to become a difficult time to play them, and don't get me wrong, they may well now turn up at Anfield and be absolutely desperate to dig in. It just doesn't entirely feel like they've got digging in them at this point. That's not to say I don't think they're in any danger of going down or anything like that. They just look from the outside like a side whose season's just going ever so slightly wrong at every single turn. I thought this would be a reset for them to suddenly be 2-0 down after 10 minutes. I don't care how good Newcastle are. You're at home, you're Leicester, you've got one of the bigger budgets in the league. That shouldn't be happening to you.
Yeah, from the outside looking in, it doesn't strike me as a great dressing room. There's just something about it that just feels a bit off. You almost feel like you're in your final part of the Rodgers tenure there. Maybe, you know, could be off with that, but it's just something you can't put my finger on. Doesn't feel right. I think Maddison's out for the game as well, isn't he? I think Maddison's.
Well, he wasn't available for this one, but they were hopefully might get him back. But he might now decide to keep him back, to be honest with you, and have an eye on him for the game that they've got that follows. So it's a funny one, is what I'm saying.
I think Liverpool should be very confident going into the game. I think Liverpool should stamp their authority all over this right from the off and think this is a great opportunity to build.
Yeah, they've got Fulham at home on the 3rd of January. So if Maddison's 50-50 for this, you surely hang on and playing for Fulham at home.
Yeah. As I said, I think Liverpool should really go for these, really assert control and dominance. It's a great opportunity to build on the 3 points away from home. You know, all of a sudden, you know, you've got back-to-back wins. That'd be great. And we're flying into 2023 with a renewed sense of purpose around the season. I think I wouldn't change anything, by the way. I think I'd go with the same team. You know, if you want to make in-game rotations, you know, look after players in game, absolutely fine.
But so I think you're completely the same 11.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, there's a question mark perhaps over Keita and Thiago, just over legs there. But Thiago didn't play the full game anyway, nope. Did he? So I think I'd be looking to just, you know, get the first 60 minutes of this game done and see where we are, and then I'll look to make changes from there. But I'd want to go strong. I'd want to get a real. I'd want to get a head start in that game.
With them, and why it'd be good if we could impose ourselves, Paddy, as Andy just pointed out to me, they've got no cohesion or confidence in defence. They've got Ward in goal, who's not impressed, continues to not impress. I think if Liverpool can get on top, they can make the game relatively comfortable, I think, quite quickly, as Newcastle managed to do in the King Power.
Yeah, I've long thought about Leicester, I think, on Stu's point about the dressing room not quite being right. I've always thought they've got it quite cosy there. You know, they haven't got the expectation quite of a big club, but they've got a really nice training ground. They'll all be on good wedge. You know, there's good players there. They don't have to necessarily perform, because the way the league is, they know they've got the quality to finish anywhere between 10th and 6th. And then if they had a really good season like they did a few years back, they could push for 4th. So I think they're at the point now, because they had a little bit of a run before the break, didn't they, where they won a few games, they beat Everton and looked good. I think when it's going their way, you can see players, in particular Maddison, can really show the quality if they're settled in a game. I think if you make it a bit nasty for them, I think if we did start like we did last night on the front foot, aggressive. The crowd are going to be up for
any
it.
Changes?
I wouldn't make any changes. No, I think we'd go with that, with what we've gone for. I think they've had enough of a break, and I think everyone will go in with the same mentality and attitude. Yeah.
Any changes?
I don't think I'd make any, but I wouldn't be surprised if the manager makes just one, maybe two tops. I think he might have an eye on Keita just for one of the midfielders. If it's not against Leicester, then you think he made that? Maybe have to change it against Brentford. It's quite tight, isn't it? 8 o'clock Friday, 5:30 Monday.
I'd sort of like him to go. As to go unchanged or whatever he thinks is literally the strongest side against Leicester, as Stu says, makes the subs, but then also just sort Brentford out on who's ready for the challenge of Brentford, if you sort of know what I mean. Like, for instance, if Konate's back, Konate comes in, I think there's nothing wrong with Gomez at right back against Brentford, mm-hmm. given the size and the physicality that they've got. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think we've seen him do that in this period in the past, where of the three or four festive game run, the final game's almost right. He looks around the dressing room, who's got it in the legs to start for me in this? And then we make changes from there. So that's I think go strong for Leicester. Ideally, be in a position to make a couple of subs and then work out what your best options are for Brentford.
I think you've got it, because you know there's very little room for error now. You know, Spurs give them a little bit of a glimpse by dropping points at Brentford, and I think that plays into how Liverpool start against Villa. I think they know front foot this, because we can close this down to 5 points with a game in hand. I don't think Spurs play till, is it New Year's Eve? So again, he can put the pressure on a little bit by putting a good win on the board on Friday night. And then all of a sudden, you are in touching distance of that top four. And I think, you know, it's difficult to make a case for finishing above Arsenal and City, obviously. And I know City aren't second at the minute, but you'd expect them to maybe beat Leeds midweek and then go above Newcastle. And at the minute, you know, Newcastle have to find belief a little bit. You know, you look at the 11 on paper, you think, yeah, it's decent in kind of certain areas of the pitch, but, you know, they are massively overperforming. You know, to be sitting second at the minute with that side, you know, fair play. I've criticised Eddie Howard in that pass, but he's obviously getting a tune out to loads of those boys. So even their points total at the minute, they've done about 33 points. It's not going to be easy to pull them back. So Spurs are the ones you've got to have your eye fixed on. So I think, yeah, go as strong as you can, but it just wouldn't surprise me knowing the manager that he might just make one change on Friday.
Okay then, excellent stuff. I'm not going to ask you a prediction. It's ages away for one thing, and we'll go from there. By the way, Spurs' next game is a home to Villa, so Spurs and Villa both get extended rest, but then they're then going to play again themselves, turn around.
They've got Palace after that, haven't they, away?
Yeah. It's the last of their run all the way through there, won't that one for Tottenham, from a Tottenham point of view. Also on Tuesday, the third Arsenal play, Newcastle United. That one is coming up as well. Anyway, thank you very much to Sam Walker down for producing, Andy Heaton for producing the sound, Paddy, Ian and Stu. It has been the Anfield Wrap this week. Hope you've had a lovely Christmas. The Reds helped.